Join me in this prayer. Precious Lord, I just know that you, among all, know how oftentimes feeling of being inadequate to tasks like this, I have a sense of. And so I ask you to help me to overcome that and pray that something I say is at least meaningful to someone. But even with my own doubts, I recognize that that you're with me and I needn't fear. Amen. So we have our compassionate pastor who sees me swollen and bloodied and bruised on Sunday. He's very kind and anoints the area around my eye. And it's like cold cocks me. He says, I was thinking of you. And by the way, you'll be given the word on Tuesday. Okay, I said, and I took my usual approach to that to say, there's a lot on my plate. I'm a retiree. I'm working a full time job on this building behind. I really don't think I can. I said, well, just take a couple of notes. So we'll all either glory in that or suffer through it with me. In my usual fashion, I managed to forestall actually trying to focus on anything to say, probably until around, on and off thoughts, but probably in a focused way until 3:30 or 4 o'clock today. And I want to say, I don't know if Malik is in the back or he's disappeared, but I do want to say, pursuant to what he said, to not make less or more of it than it was, but if you didn't have a chance to see some of the service that was the memorial service for Michael Jackson, it really was very lovely, and it was very filled with the Lord, and Jesus was prominently featured, and it was very ecumenical. It wasn't exclusively focused in a Christian sense, but it had something that I think gave people a sense of this not being another one of these extravaganzas put on by the Hollywood cognoscenti. It's something that really was for the people. I enjoyed it, and I'm sure it will be played and replayed and played and replayed. And if you didn't have a chance to see some, but I think it's actually worth watching. And certainly you, at the end, his daughter does speak, and how could a young girl not be in anguish with the passing of her father? So, you know, my heart goes out like the rest of the world's to theirs. The continuous word I got, and this actually began on Sunday, was testing. And I wasn't sure if it was testing in a sort of literal sense. This is just a test. You know, you don't want to do it, but you got to do it. You know, so correlate to that obedience and. These are opportunities. These are available chances in one's life to grow in some sense. So I've chosen to think of this as a test that's both challenging and opportune. Gives me a chance, not necessarily to say anything that anybody else will pick up on, but at least to focus my own thoughts a bit on what to be tested and testing is all about. And at the end, I'm going to just, which I hope will come soon, at the end, I'm going to talk a little bit about this project or this building as a sort of metaphor for life, because I've been very focused on this for the last month, and it's been, has something to do with my thoughts of a recent nature. I'll freely admit, I went to Concordance to kind of get a sense of testing and, I'll say that the one in the back of the NIV is relatively limited, and that's what I went to. I'm a kind of limited guy, so that appealed to me. There weren't all that many references to go toward. So let's start in the beginning, and where else to start but a Genesis. In Genesis chapter 22, I actually am attempting to use post-its to see if I won't struggle too badly with finding where this is meant to be. the boldface intro to chapter 22, at least in the NIV, says Abraham tested. And I think we'll all really remember the story of Abraham. It's got to be pretty commonplace knowledge. God has clearly blessed this man. He's obviously defined tasks that he has to do, but he's given him Isaac, his son. It's come late in life at a time that doesn't make biologic sense. It makes spiritual sense, but it just doesn't make sense in the natural world. Sarah's been returned to him, and here's the kindness of our God demands that he sacrifice his son. And that has generally struck me as bizarre, and I guess if it played out that he sacrificed his son, it would be bizarre, but that's not, in fact, what happens as we know. And so he goes up onto the region of Moriah, and he delivers his son. His son basically carries the implements of his own destruction, really. And his son, not knowing the punchline to this kind of story, trusts in his father, so that he sort of have a trusting Abraham who's going to do an unthinkable thing, I think, to sacrifice one's own son for your God, for your Lord, whom you love and believe and are faithful to. And Isaac, whose age I don't know that we know here, but I'm sure he's old enough to be able to think these things through at some point, is bound. And then the jig is up. He must know that he's the offering. And yet there's no protestation. He's goes along even to the point of Abraham drawing up a knife to begin the sacrifice. And, you know, thank God that God intervenes and offers the lamb that he will provide for the sacrifice. But testing. Sometimes these are very small daily tests that we experience, and then something like this is one of these mega tests. A few times in our, hopefully in any of our lives, will any of us have to go through something like this, but one can't imagine but that this wasn't tremendously defining and strengthening for all involved. Abraham, his faith was tested, and he didn't come up wanting. He was faithful. He was obedient. He was going to do as God directed. His son ultimately isn't sacrificed, and what a wonderful example for his son. As terrifying as it must have been to a preteen or teenager, or whatever his age was at that time. And so we get at least I get the message from this, there's not just, everything doesn't have a good ending. I'm not naive enough to think that, but we get a strong sense that even if we don't understand the test, if we're obedient, everything will be fine. We might not understand it in this life, we might not understand it in the natural, but it's, at least for me, this is a very, it's a simple story, but it's a very, it's supportive of my own kind of times of self-doubting. To as a father, to think of being asked this myself, I just find myself hard pressed to know if I could follow that request, that demand. Obviously, free will exists, and he could have said, "No, I'm sorry." Who knows what might have been happened. So, real test of his faith. He was true to his faith, and God rewarded him. God rewarded his family, blessed him further, and we could, I suppose, continue throughout Genesis and get me off the hook, but I'll leave that for now. In a sort of global sense, the story of Job is about testing in some sense. It's about pain. It's about suffering. It's about obedience. It's about not abandoning one's faith in the throes of the constancy of the sort of continuing physical and emotional and financial kind of devastation this man was subject to. And so without going specifically to that, I thinking about testing and what examples do we have in terms of scriptural references, and there are many, obviously, even if the concordance in the back of the NIV only has five or six, you don't have to flip many pages to see examples of God's testing us. But Job is not short. I don't mean of stature and length of book. And if you wade your way through and struggle through this and really pay attention to it, it's amazing the things that befall this guy. And he's, and in the end, he's rewarded. And to me, it's kind of interesting. For we in the natural world, these rewards are natural. I mean, they're concrete. There's a good story. One can identify with it. One can be uplifted by it and supported in his or her own struggles. But without, but it's quite clear that there are huge spiritual rewards. And so we see the natural and we identify with that, but we know that that's just the tip of the big iceberg. And that's just a wonderful, I think, very wonderful to know. The Psalms speak of testing, and Psalm 66 is referenced. And it's really a very joyous psalm. I'm not sure how many of you are committed to knowing all of the Psalms of the Bible. I'm not. But reading this through, it's a praise and glory. And God is just, these are the praises being sung to God. And in this sort of middle section, praise our God, O peoples. Let the sound of his praise be heard. He has preserved our lives and kept our feet from slipping. For you, O God, tested us. You refined us like silver. You brought us into prison and laid burdens on our backs. You let men ride over our heads. We went through fire and water, but you brought us to a place of abundance. Very, very visual, to me anyway, to just think of these the burdens and then the deliverance. Stick with the program, and it's nice the way it's written. You refined us like silver, so it's not just a test that is for its own sake. It's the constancy of testing that lets us redefine ourselves, that lets God help us to redefine ourselves, to be a different person than we were before we had that test. So I'm going to be more motivated to read the Psalms, and I'm gladdened by that.
Lay that on the basket.
That's it. The man you love to hate, Kim Bergeron. So testing gives us just provides opportunities to act and react out of devotion, out of faith, against oftentimes our own self-interest, in ways that the fly on the wall or a third-party observer would really probably make very little sense. And I don't guess, I know that's what faith is about. It's having this belief in things that, to some real extent, make no sense. And buoyed by the notion that when I find myself feeling somewhat nonsensical, that's fine. That's not a place that's a bad place to be. It's okay. And just press ahead. And if in doubt, call somebody more knowledgeable or look for a scriptural context. Or I like Doug Fortune's notion, just sit and wait on the presence of the Lord.
Yes.
And I think that... I tried that. There wasn't enough time, but I tried that at 4:45 today. Come on, Lord, get on. I'll say something here. Have another cup of coffee, bro. You'll be fine. All right. It's interesting, but despite the fact that I know the New Testament is replete with testing references, almost without exception, all of the references I have are really Old Testament. So I'm going to just turn briefly to continue the merriment to Isaiah, chapter 48. And really this is about, at this point in Isaiah, it's about the test of Israel. And this is a castigation of the population's really not, they haven't been behaving very well. They're worshiping things they ought not to do. They're they're just not, they're not a good lot of people. You know, they've been given the opportunity, they're kind of messing it up, basically. And so, you know, there's this warning of to Israel, rebuking the idols, and get your behavior in mind. And in 48, let's see, well, I'm going to back, start to say 48:10, which is actually, again, the reference about the testing, but to go back a little bit before that, start at 7, I guess, 48:7. They are created now and not long ago. You have not heard of them before today. It's hard to get the context, but that's the way it continues. So you cannot say, yes, I knew them. Knew of them. He's just giving them new information, and they can't tell. They can't pretend that they know anything about it. You have neither heard nor understood from of old. Your ear has not been open. These are very closed-minded people. They're not hearing what he's saying. He's just trying to tell them these things. Well, do I know how treacherous you are? You were called a rebel from birth. For my own name's sake, I delay my wrath. For the sake of my praise, I hold it back from you so as not to cut you off. So this is a God that, you know, this is an omnipotent God. This is a God that can do anything. He's backing off. He's kind of telling them, it's okay. It's not okay, but, you know, I've only got so much patience. See, I have refined you, though not as silver. I have tested you in the furnace of affliction for my own sake. For my own sake, I do this. How can I let myself be defamed? I will not yield my glory to another. So even in the face of their rejection of him, he's still holding back because he is in control. He's just letting them go to some extent. And you know, and you go to the next verse, and now they're being delivered out of Babylon. So even for those of us that consistently mess up, that just can't quite get it right, given multiple opportunities, there's no condemnation. You can give us the reference for that. I can't quite think of it right now, but no condemnation in the Lord.
Romans 8:1.
Thank you. Right on the tip of my tongue. Didn't quite get it. But you've quoted it many times, and I remember the sentiment, if not the location.
Right.
And then the last couple of things I wanted to make mention of before, just talking a little bit about this building, is in 1 Timothy. And find a post-it, and I might even find a reference. I think I should put those index markers in that I've only bought 2 years ago at Morningstar. I guess that would make sense, wouldn't it? Got two sets. No, isn't that this so stupid? I'm sorry if I'm being a little too confessional here, but it's incredible when I think of, I'm probably not different than others, when I think of, to some extent, my own life, I get things set up to do. They take no effort. Nothing. There's more effort not doing them than there is doing them. Lord, I'm sorry. You know, just teach me, help me, beat me into submission to do the right thing.
I don't think we're going to agree on that one.
Well,
you don't want that one.
I don't know. I think sometimes you've got to get the attention of the donkey. You got to hit it. You know, I don't know that there's. You just take the stick and really wail it. And then when you get its attention, you can be more gentle. All right. Timothy, chapter 3. This is about overseers and deacons. And I didn't go to this because of the deacon entitlement or titling that there is. A job with very few tasks, by the way. Thank you. Clean up after people.
You're in chapter 4,
you said? It's in 3. Yeah, I'm sorry. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and overseers and deacons. Okay. And actually the reference is down in 10. He's talking about deacons. They must first be tested. But I, in looking at this, I thought it was instructive. I don't know if we have to read the thing in its totality, but as in many other parts of the Bible, there are kind of, it's not a laundry list, it's not all inclusive, but there are a series of listings of things that I hope all of us aspire to be, and that at least where the overseer is concerned, is demanded of the overseer. There are certain prerequisites for the job. And these are things that, they just make great sense, and regardless of religious persuasion. One should be temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money, managing one's own family well, see the children obey when obey him with proper respect. These are kind of sort of general life principles, and yes, the overseer has to have them, but wouldn't it be sweet if all of us did at all times? And I'm sure none of us do at all times, and most of us have some of them many of the times. But when you go down to the deacons, there's just more discussion about things that a deacon has to be. And here again we see the word tested. It's one thing to be in one's own personal experience to feel challenged and to know that there are certain benchmarks to meet. But this really says there's a super demand that needs to be satisfied. There's really, there's the presence of the Lord that's never without knowledge of what we're doing. Always knows what we're doing. I'm not trying to get into a sin-conscious mentality. We can't sin because he's going to see us. Sometimes when I'm on the fence of things that I'm going to do, it helps me personally to recognize that some of these tests are there for a purpose, and to feel anxious in the setting of being on the horns of a dilemma about something to do that one kind of knows is marginal and yet is tempted to do it. You can come back to the book and it will help you to get through that moment or two. Hebrews has some references to testing, but they're really quite similar. They're just a sort of retelling of the Abraham tale. So we can go to Hebrews 11, 17 if we want, and I'm not going to choose to do that. So I did want to talk about this project I've been doing, and an element at least of testing and a challenge. Those of you that have seen me the last several weeks know I have been focused on trying to get done something that I thought would be fairly straightforward. Take off the covering of a roof and put another one on. That's kind of how it was described to me, even the guy that I'm working with. And I both thought that's what it is. Well, the taking it off has been significantly challenging. Uncovering what was covered demonstrates that the goodly portion of this roof, I'm talking about rafters to covering, has to be rebuilt. Has been now. Walls have to be reestablished. Just a lot of stuff. And this is not my forte. I'm pretty athletic. I've come up with a stepdad who raised me who had more tools than most have in a lifetime in a small corner of his shop and taught me how to use them. But this has been a challenge to do this, and it's ongoing. It's not completed. It'll be another week or two. But I'm getting, I'm getting a little prideful is what I'm leaning toward. I'm feeling like this is not what I do, but I'm doing it okay. I'm hanging in there. I'm getting out there at 8:30, 9 o'clock. I'm doing a full day's work. I'm getting real grungy. I got calluses that I didn't used to have. Still riding my bike as best I can when I can squeeze in a, 20 or 30 mile or every 2 or 3 days, but not like I'd like to. Haven't swung it off club in 2 months, but I will. Anyway, so I'm going along, and we've had so much rain. I know you've all experienced the same. It's not good in the roofing business. you just can't put stuff on stuff that's wet, and you can't work when it's wet. And you got to let it dry. When it dries, it gets wet again. And when you got to understand, when there's no effective roof, that means anything inside this building isn't really being very well protected. So a little like the Dutch boy putting his finger in the hole of the dike, going, you can't really go around enough. This is a 30 by 57 building. You can't just carry buckets from place to place. So it's been challenging. But I'm seeing the light maybe at the end of the tunnel. It's getting closer. We're actually getting stuff covering parts of the roof now. We've rebuilt a lot of things that had to be done. We're getting challenged. Now we're going up some significant incline. But along the way of taking the covering off, it turns out it has not one, but three or four layers of stuff by the time we get up there. And part of the removal process yields remnants of what was holding the things in place, little staples, you know, just the ends of them, because they've been all hacked off to get the stuff off of it. And you really can't put stuff down on little, you know, I don't know, eighth of an inch projections with a point on them. It's going to puncture or pierce anything. So one of those mindless tasks that the unskilled laborer is doing is to pull these things out. You take these devices like pliers or channel locks, and, you know, and they don't come out easily, and you're grabbing them, and you can't grab them. This does have something to do with religion. It does really. I mean, besides being sort of human testing. Well, it's about testing. But it's even, for me, even more than that. So Wednesday passed. We had, it rained. There's a surprise.
Oh, no.
And it rained in the middle of the day, but it cleared up. We had some gorgeous days after the rain. Today was beautiful after a huge downpour in our family. Filled up a couple of good-sized buckets. So when I got done, I'd already been out in the morning before it rained. I had to get off the roof because it was going to rain. But I'm going out on my staple brigade, and I move the ladder. Now this is, I don't know, it's about 40 feet to the top, and it's on an incline that's kind of like this. And so my strategy is to have a ladder that's kind of parallel to the roof line and get the ladder fixed firmly at the bottom, go up the ladder, and sort of work at arm's length as far as I can get, and, you know, stretch it, get another one. And so I did, you know, beautifully well before the rain. I put a ladder in, moved it over 6 or 8 feet, did the same thing I did the other time, drove a stake in to hold the bottom in place. And I got onto this ladder unthinkingly, didn't check anything, you know. And I hadn't been up on this ladder more than 4 or 5 minutes, except I'm way at the extension of it. So the ladder's not exactly flush with the roof line, so it's kind of 6 or 8 inches, and you could imagine it's like a lever. And so I'm really stupid, really, is what it is. So it's just dumb. And so I'm up here just basically using the ladder as a pry on the stake. And I'm on my right side down, and I'm reaching for this. And I become suddenly acutely aware, and I'm not sure it's because I heard something or I felt something, but I'm aware that this ladder's not in the same place it was like a millisecond before. It actually sounds comical, and it is, but it was really terrifying. And so I am basically on a ladder that's sliding down a roof freely. And I'm going over the edge, and I'm thinking back to childhood where I used to jump off my roof of my garage. I actually measure about 11 feet to the ground, except that the ground isn't the ground, it's concrete.
Oh.
Right. So I'm thinking, you know, in this sort of instantaneous, well, I'll just push off the ladder and jump to the side.
Oh, no.
Well, but the thing is, Olivia, you can't push off something that's moving away from you. So I'm attempting to do this, and nothing's happening. So I'm just, it's like I'm gliding. It's not gliding. I'm free-falling because the ladder ends up 15 feet farther out than it was before. I'm 6 feet out from the edge of the building when I come down, and I come down unceremoniously on the right side of my body, and the first thing I'm aware of is that I have a strong sense of a thud and an awareness that I really may have done something like really serious, because my head has hit the concrete and has rebounded up. And I'm lying there and I'm saying, you know, I'm fearful. But this is the good part of the story. I mean, it's good now. Things look okay, and I don't have any worse brain damage than I did before, I don't think. But I'm thinking at that moment, not that there couldn't be something bad, but in a way, whatever it is, it's going to be okay. Because I can't believe God would let something disastrous happen to me. Wouldn't let me die, but it'd still be okay. Because I have a belief that lets me glory in that. And so I push myself up, and I put my hand up, and it's pulled away, and it's all covered with blood. And I'm going like this, thinking, I hope my eye is not, like, I'm going to be blind in one eye. I'm not even aware that there are all other kinds of things. I'm all scraped here, bruised here, the next day, my hand's 2.5 times its size, and I can't squeeze anything. I got whiplash on my neck. But the testing part of this is that it really made me quickly ask the question, do I really believe in this or not? And is it really, is this in theory or in practice something that actually applies in a real life model to me? And I'm just glad to say, I mean, it's always good when things have worked out, of course, but I'm just glad to say I really felt strengthened by the notion that I didn't seem to waver. That I, you know, I did those things that I knew I needed to do. I went down, I'm by myself, I'm putting ice on the thing, I'm trying to wash it. It's pretty deep, turns out. I'm thinking, I'll just steri-strip it, you know, put it together with a little band-aid. I can't do that. Sorry to be emergency room, they sew me up and I'm fine. But it was, and back to even the Michael Jackson passing, it's one of these reminders that we're always on the edge. We really have a sort of frailty. We think we've got a real toehold. We think we've got a grasp on at least life. Maybe not life's circumstances, but at least life itself is ours. No, it isn't ours. It's his. You know, and we're just here. And we need to enjoy it, what we have of it. We need to share it with others. You know, these attributes that all of us aspire to have, we need to work daily on demonstrating those to others, and if by our example they can be brought closer to Him, to God, so much the better. So thank you for all of those that were concerned. I chose not to tell this in as extensive a way on Sunday, especially after I knew I had to be here on Tuesday. But what else can I talk about? I want to go back. Really, I don't want to overemphasize, but pride got me on that roof without looking closely at what was there. I was doing it. Go right up that ladder. Just take care of it. I knew I could do it. It's not very challenging. A mindless, a fool could do it if you could see and feel. And I just didn't think about it. And it was really completely of my own making. So the other correlate to that is we talk about angels. You know, I'm choosing to believe there were some angels on the job. Mm-hmm. Whether Peggy, fractured hip, broken pelvis, transection of the cervical spine, quadriplegic instantly.
Yeah.
You know, bleeding on the brain, hemorrhage outside, hemorrhage inside, blind in an eye.
So you literally fell from the roof down to the cement.
I went down with the ladder, and I actually landed on the ladder. With my head whiplashed out onto the concrete. Yeah. I mean, all in a flash. It's astounding that I'm okay.
Yes, it is.
It is astounding. I mean, I am. And I choose to let it strengthen my belief. That there are forces that are on the job that, wasn't my time and I was protected. And I'll check the stakes and I'll do a better job next time as well. You know, I'm not without responsibility. So, Lord, I want to thank you for letting me share this. I know some of it was somewhat comical. The basic notion, though, is that we all, we are tested. We're tested periodically. We have big tests. We have daily tests. We have little tests. We can choose to ignore them. We can ignore what we know we should do, what we know that we want to do. We can, you know, honor our own personal wishes, or we can look toward the Father. We can look toward Jesus. We can see what His example provides us with. And I can't imagine, no matter what the outcome, that we'd ever suffer if we just followed that kind of general approach to testing and resolution of tests. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes.
Father, we just want to thank you for not only what you've given through this man, but at the same time that you've sustained him and you continue to protect him. Father, I'm blessed, truly blessed at this testimony tonight. Not only for what you've done, but what you're in the process of doing and the reassurance of how precious he is to you and to us. In Jesus' name.
Thank you. to Lord.
Thank you. It was a blast. Wonderful.